Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Monday, Monday. So good to me.
What would you say you do here?
Monday morning. It was all I hoped it would be.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Monday morning couldn't guarantee that Monday evening you would still be here with me.
What would you say you do here?
Monday, Monday, can't trust that day. Monday, Monday, sometimes it just turns out that way. Oh, Monday morning, you gave me no warning of what was to be. Oh, Monday, Monday, how could you leave and not take me?
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand it? What the hell is wrong with you people?
Every other day of the week is fine, yeah. But whenever Monday comes, you can find me crying all of the time. Monday, Monday. Monday, Monday, can't trust that day.
Never trust Mondays, no.
Monday, Monday, it just turns out that way.
All right, the gray area is back for another big week.
Monday, Monday,
we kick off the week talking about stuff. It's more therapy for me and Gray than it is anything else, but bear with us. We got all kinds of different topics that we will get to here on the Gray Area. We had a little technical glitch here at the radio station earlier this morning, which kind of sent all of us into disarray, but we are somewhat organized, whatever that may be, and we have an array of topics, I think, that I think defines what the Gray Area will be every Monday morning from 8 to 9. I'm rather proud and a little bit giddy about the array of topics that we have for you today. From golf to Hank Aaron to our lead story, Mr. Greg Gunderson. Good morning to you, by the way.
Good morning.
Lead story out of Kitsap County, Washington, where the authorities there last week spent time apprehending a gentleman from the woods who was accused of stealing his girlfriend's chicken. And he, just to give you an idea, 3 hours previous, apparently the police had a little discussion with him about 3 hours earlier in the day last week, and which led to another call 3 hours later, which led to a race through the woods to apprehend the 50-year-old gentleman who had in his possession, Gray, as you can see on the photo here, as he's going into the back of the policeman's car. They were nice enough to let him bring the chicken with him to the back of the car as he was being apprehended.
See, I think you left out what might be my favorite part of this entire story, Joel, which is that he I think it was like there was a keep away kind of vibe to the whole ordeal. When he grabbed the chicken, if you look, he actually said to the face of the woman he stole the chicken from, "I've got Polly." Like, As in, like, I'm in the safe zone. You can't tag me. Like, that's what I hear. Like, I've got Polly. I don't care what you do because I got the chicken. Like, the level of childish defiance in that statement. I'm projecting. I am projecting the childish defiance onto it, but I think it fits. I mean, like, and Polly, wrong kind of bird. Polly doesn't like crackers. Polly likes chicken feed. But yeah, still.
I'm assuming an egg layer, probably. So a valuable bird, right?
Sure.
A hen.
The economy currently turns on chicken. Well, I mean, it kind of does, actually. That was his, not only Polly's eggs were his nest egg, I suppose you could say.
That's at a Kitsap County, what state was that in, did I say?
Washington.
Washington. Oh, okay.
Not the state you think of when you think of humans who would steal chickens from other humans.
I was thinking another part of the country, but
yep, same.
But so that's our lead story today. Gray and I are both feeling the effects of a little too much. I don't think there's been too many radio announcers in the history of radio that have been accused of, you know, we sit a lot. We do work. We're somewhat physically fit, but our job involves a microphone and sitting a lot. So anytime we have to go out and cut wood like you did, or go out and dig holes and move dirt around like I did, usually Monday mornings are like, oh my gosh, whew.
Yeah, and it's I haven't been on a good sleep schedule since I started getting up at 5, and of course Rachel's had to be dragged in because we've only had one car, so there's kind of just an extra weight to the Monday transition lately.
Yeah,
and it struck today, and of course you, like you said, you and I got to work today, and neither of our workstations was cooperating, so it's like, you know what, fine. That's fine. That's happy Monday.
Well, we got the NFL draft coming up a week from Thursday. That's in Green Bay, of course. Many of you are headed on over there. So it's going to be an interesting draft for the Packers to see. They don't like to go wide receivers early.
Nope.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about something that we didn't get to last week, and that is bad NFL teams that are that have bad owners. You know, there's some teams that have owners where the owners just can't just stop. They just can't keep their hands off and let the smart people do their thing. And it shows, right?
That's the common thread. That is 100% the common thread, is over-involvement. There are some owners that are heavily involved who have long proven that their teams can succeed because either the owner is not as involved as they think they are, or they are still hiring people and letting them lead. Think Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. The Cowboys have seen success under the ownership of Jerry Jones, and he is one of the most involved owners in the league. So involved owners are not by default bad. Let's look at an involved owner who is bad. Shad Khan. He owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. He is one of the more involved owners. He is personally friendly with Trevor Lawrence, their starting quarterback, and with other players. He is very personally, directly involved in the hiring of Liam Cohen, their new head coach, who was the offensive coordinator from the Buccaneers. But Shad has made it clear that he wants to run that team the way that movies from the 90s would have you believe is possible. You know, think of The Rookie. You know, if you just try hard enough and if you love baseball, you can beat the Yankees. That's how I think Shad Khan runs his team. It's just, if I just believe, if my heart tells me that this is the right person. Here's the problem. Shad Khan's heart leads him to stinkers every year. Every year, Shad Khan hires somebody, brings in a player. The next big thing for the Jaguars, I can tell you, is going to be another bad season. He's made it clear. So I wanted to point that out, that there are a couple owners out there who, until they sell, most recently it was Dan Snyder of the Washington Commanders, Washington football team. He was pushed out in a bit of a sexual assault allegation scandal, but that was honestly just the excuse that they finally used to show him the door. I mean, he was tanking that team for decades.
I saw this subject on our list here, and I immediately thought to myself,
Toby's
what,
got input. Toby's
got Monday morning rolling. I thought to myself immediately, what kind of an owner would I be? And maybe people can ask themselves individually, if you had millions of dollars, which is a tough question to answer because I think money changes you, a lot of people. If I owned an NFL team, I foresee myself being as someone who would want to be there.
Right.
But would just watch. I would just be like just enjoying the moment on the sidelines and letting the people that are hired to do their job very little interjection, very little, you know, comment. I would let them do their job, but I would just be there like in the back room, maybe of the quarterback meeting, just say, okay, this would be kind of cool to see how this goes. That would be my personality anyway.
That's who I would want to be, but I don't know if I would actually manage that, because I know that when the option for control is there, historically, I have taken it for better or worse. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important of me to recognize that. I think it's important that everybody knows what style of leadership or control they would take of any situation and to respond accordingly. But that's a level of self-awareness that I don't have in the first place. So to ask it from other people is quite a bit. That said, I'm pretty sure I'd be a control freak. I would be Shad Khan for a year. I think maybe a season. And then hopefully I would have a really good friend who I acquire in that process, or family member. You know, someone I can trust, someone I can hire. I'll call Bill Belichick. That's my first step. Bill, you do this and just let me collect the bottom line.
Because, I mean, drafting is such a crapshoot. It's just, I mean, there are some players that, you know, at some positions that percentage-wise have a better chance of panning out if they show certain skills. But in the draft, I would just say, you know what, I'm going to let somebody else make the bad decision this year.
Yeah.
This would be my way of looking at it, I guess.
Oh, so. Yeah, scapegoat. Hire scapegoat. That's yeah. Week one, day one, hour one, schedule plan, hire scapegoat. Then anything that comes after, not my problem.
Yeah, an exciting time to have the NFL draft, of course, right here in Wisconsin and Green Bay. I am very excited to see where this next topic leads. It's one we had from last week, but we never got to it. So Gray and Rachel's Walmart Wizard Experience.
So
I'm very excited about this.
It happened. It was casual. It was quiet. And then Rachel and I kind of examined what happened afterwards. We needed an item, a very simple item, a very common item. Many people have this item in their house. Mm-hmm. Flexible ice packs. Rachel, of course, many people know she rolled her car a couple weeks ago. Everybody's A-okay, but she got a nice big old goose egg on her noggin, and we just had extra use for ice packs around the house.
Yeah, kind of the flexible gel type
exactly,
ice pack. Right?
Exactly the kind of thing that Gray would take to workplaces and forget about them. There's probably still one at St. Croix, so we didn't have our flexible ice packs.
Right. Okay.
And we went to Walmart, and so, okay, it's fair to say it's probably the beginning of flexible ice pack season. Maybe they just got a fresh shipment in on the Walmart shelves. But for whatever reason, and I'm not going to say which Walmart we were at specifically, though it's easy to guess, I don't think this person was necessarily supposed to do what they did. We scanned our flexible ice packs at the self-checkout, and it said error. There was an error message on the self-checkout. Mm-hmm. And I think, Rachel, what do you think those were? Like $8, $9, something like that? Maybe 10-ish bucks? Like, I feel like they were around that $6 to $8 range. And so we scanned them, and nothing. And so the checkout, self-checkout attendant, who basically is making sure you're not a thief, he walks over because that's his second job, is to fix whatever mess you create if it's not thievery. And no scan, error. He tried it, nothing. Okay, the item had a design on it that might be interfering with the scan. Block it, try it, fail again. So what do? He pulls up his little employee tablet, and he's searching for the thing, and he says, I'm going to search flexible ice pack. And I got my phone. I'm searching through the Walmart app trying to find this item, and it's not there. So I thought, okay, he's got the back-end access. Me, the peon looking on the Walmart app, I can't find it. He can. Well, he doesn't. So what does he do? He says, $2.
Oh, he just picks a random price out of the air.
Yeah, and so he taps on the screen a button combination that allows him to hard code the price to $2. And I thought, where did he get that number? What costs $2 today?
Exactly.
It's 2025. I couldn't get an egg for that.
You get a Snicker bar for $2. Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, a Walmart brand Snicker bar, maybe. $1.99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, he casually waltzed over, decided that across all of Walmart, these things were going to be $2, which, I mean, I love him for. That was an awesome choice. That's exactly what I hoped he would do, had the power he had.
I don't think in the list, in the procedural list of how to handle a situation like that, of, you know, make sure the bar's code scan is clear, now check the website. I don't think randomly charging $2 is anywhere on that procedural list for Walmart.
Nope. I mean, sure, maybe use your best judgment, assign the price you see fit, and we'll talk about it on the weekend. Like, I wonder, I feel like this guy's pay is getting docked, because especially now that I'm revealing it, Walmart's code enforcement is going to go through and find every purchase of a flexible ice pack.
So you got a $2 flexible ice pack is what you got.
We got a box of two flexible ice packs for $2, and we know that that price set above $5. And I think we even mentioned that. I think I told him we could go check and get one. He said, $2.
$2.
And I thought within the bureaucracy, the red tape, the systems, the redundancy in place to make sure I don't get away with anything free or cheap, I got something cheap from Walmart.
Now I have something to look forward to because I'm looking forward to the day somewhere in the future where I'm at Walmart and an item doesn't scan and I want to see if just $2 is the default number.
You know, that's a good question. I almost want to see if we can force a test case here, find another item. See, the whole thing, the only opportunity, it only became an opportunity because an item scanned poorly. So you have to start there. And it was unexpected. I don't know that I could do it on purpose, Joel. It was I'm a natural, not intentional.
And I, the people that have that job of overseeing the self-checkout, there's some that are really good. There's just some that are very personable and very good at it.
Yeah.
And there's others that just, it seems like when there's a problem and you kind of wave them down or turn on the light, that you've just really intruded upon their entire existence to have them come over to you.
Oh, yeah. That's a what you make of it job. I am 100% sure that is a what you make of it job. Like, if somebody is grumpy, having a bad time, or, like, if somebody is having a poor experience doing that job, I tend to believe it's as much the person as the job. That said, there are going to be days when the people you're dealing with are a bad trend, so that's an outlier. But, I mean, like, it's going to be, I think that's a lump of clay. What are you going to shape that into?
Exactly. This is the Gray Area. We take an hour every Monday morning from 8 to 9, and we just chat about stuff. You can consider it a free therapy session, if you like, whether it tilts you into the good part or bad part of the day. Well, let's transition right into another topic that you had from last week, too,
okay.
Which is Tractor Supply, which is a store. I think there's one up in Ashland. I think there's
one in Walmart. There's one across from Walmart in Minocqua.
Okay. All right. Kind of the new stores that have popped up around the area.
So the way I listed it, it was informed by our experience last weekend, which was my eyes being opened. I have, as I hit my 20s, I've kind of discovered an interest in clothing. Not that I want to be in the most fashionable, most recent. I don't care about wearing particular brands, but I found that I like wearing clothes that are nicely designed, that fit me well. You know, things that I didn't really even think about in the first place, and if I had thought about them as a kid, I wouldn't have had much opportunity to. So I've just been a little bit more deliberate, not about matching colors, but about the function and the longevity of my outfits.
Yeah.
The reason for that is because I realized that I kind of did like style, and I bought some crappy clothes that, you know, like the fleece shirt jacket I didn't have before. I got the junky one, so I shouldn't have done that, but it was a new tool in the toolkit as far as outfits go. Mm-hmm. So just kind of started thinking about clothing a little more, and in the process discovered some really junky clothes, and I got them mostly from Walmart, but there was more about what it was than how good it was. And so in that process, like, okay, now I know what clothes I like. What are the good ones? Where are the good values?
Right.
Tractor Supply is the clothing value store that Walmart used to be.
Really?
We used to go to Walmart once a year. You got your size clothes, and hopefully you didn't have a growth spurt that year. Mm-hmm. And
for
those,
school year.
Clothes would last you the school year, and if you got lucky, you had a spare pair for next year that had some slightly worn out knees, but chances are you could probably get clothes at Walmart that lasted 2 years.
Right.
I can't do that anymore. I don't know if that's because my lifestyle is more active, because the clothing quality has gone downhill. I suspect it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you what, though, I can get a $15 pair of canvas pants, hard-wearing canvas pants, at Tractor Supply.
Yeah.
In my size. Kids' clothing might be a little bit tough, but I'm shilling Tractor Supply right now, because I can go there and spend $100 on a month's worth of clothes that will last me a year.
I got another tip for people, too, and again, they don't advertise with us or anything, but I have found in the last couple of years, Dunham Sports has jeans. The jeans that I have on right now, $9.99.
Nice.
To find a pair of jeans. Now, they're not going to last quite as long as the $40 pair of Levi's, but they'll last you a year or two or something before they might split out a little bit. But I'm thinking $9.99. That's for a pair of jeans, I was looking around like, this can't be right. This can't be the right price.
There's two flavors
of cheap.
So that's
kind of where I'm not a big fashion guy. I'm more about comfort, and they're comfortable. And as you get older, comfort becomes number one. Just comfort.
Agreed. I mean, of the clothes. I bought two of those canvas pants recently, and neither of them were anything more than a straight fit. I've officially got relaxed fit pants for like the first time in 15 years.
Yeah.
Because I was in high school right as the skinny jean trend stuck on. So I finally shook myself loose of that. But I've learned that there's two flavors of cheap. There's cheap that, like, frankly, that you get at Walmart a lot of the time, where you pick it up, you feel it, where it's like, yeah, this feels like it'd be comfortable, but like it's going to fall apart in a couple months. You know, right. There's not rigidity to it. Soft, yes. Long wearing, no. But you go to Tractor Supply, you pick up a pair of canvas pants. It's like, this is my size. There's three rows of thread there. Like, I'm not even going to tear this thing anytime soon, and I'm going to beat the heck out of it.
Yeah, and thrift stores are always good too, of course. I'm convinced, I tell my wife this many times, we could probably just stop making clothing on the planet for 10 years, and we would probably still have plenty for everybody to go around with the mountains of clothing that are at thrift stores. I have a problem buying jeans at a thrift store for some reason. I don't know. Maybe I got burnt in the early days of thrift stores, but I don't even usually look for jeans. I'll look for large, extra large shirts because I'm a tall guy with long arms, and finding a lot of times when you buy a shirt, when you're tall, the shirt may fit you, but the arms never quite cover the wrist. They kind of come a little bit short, you know, then you spend most of your time trying to cover, just kept pulling your shirt down. But if you can get that for a couple bucks, usually when you're at a Goodwill or at a thrift store, the Nativity or the local thrift stores here in Park Falls, if the price is a couple bucks, you're like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. If not, I'll donate it back.
my jean shopping experience, and this is still in that two flavors of cheap thing. The other flavor of cheap is that it's made of decent materials, but just doesn't have a name brand or advertising behind it. My most recent jeans acquisition, $9.99. It was up at Ollie's. Good Stuff Cheap just recently opened up in Ironwood.
Yeah.
And they had a whole rack of Rustler brand jeans, which are, I think, basically a Wrangler copy. But like, I felt the materials, like, that's really heavy, rugged denim. It's not made to caress my kneecaps, but cool. Neither is the work I'm doing. Like, that's what the pants are for.
Right.
So that's, yeah, I'm in more comfy, cheap clothes than I've had in years, and it's tough to believe that's possible in 2025, but it is. Go to Tractor Supply and go to Ollie's.
I think most guys, especially in the Northwoods, it's scary for me to admit this, but I have clothes that I still wear that I probably have had for 15 years. most of them are like undershirts or stuff like that. But sometimes I look in my closet and I think to myself, boy, that's lasted a long time, because I can age it back to when I was coaching my son at a younger age in like grade school. And I'm like, okay, that was like 13 years ago. And I remember I wore that back then.
Yeah.
It's, for me, if it doesn't wear out, I'm good with it. Oh, and it's still comfortable. I never get to the point where I'm like, oh, I've worn that too many times. As a guy, I never got to that point.
No. See, I've seen people doing what you're doing, and I've admired it, and that's what I've been aiming for. Like, that's how I wound up trying those things from the Walmart rack that ended up being awful. But okay, now I know that I like chinos. Let's just get some decent ones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I'm wearing straight fit canvas pants from Tractor Supply Co. right now, and they are, man, get you a $30 pair of canvas pants, and I may be buried in these. What's going to happen to them?
More of the gray area. We take Monday mornings 8 to 9. We talk about a little bit of everything. We're going to talk a little bit about Hank Aaron, the 51st anniversary of him hitting his 715th home run. Happened last week, and I stumbled across some interesting information with that. So more of the gray area coming up after the news here on 98Q.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Trump cabinet getting to work with dozens of global trading partners after President Trump's wide-ranging tariffs take effect or are paused. ABC's Mary Bruce at the White House with more on what those who are there are saying.
They insist they can get this done in just 90 days, but it's a real steep climb. I mean, we know right now of at least a handful of countries that are in active negotiations. They say roughly 130 have come calling and are now in discussions to somehow strike a deal. But remember the last time the president negotiated a major trade deal deal with Mexico and Canada in his first term. That took years to fully come to fruition.
The president of El Salvador visits the White House today as the Supreme Court orders the Trump administration to facilitate the return of a man who was mistakenly sent to that maximum security Salvadoran prison. There is a suspect in custody in Pennsylvania who police say set fire to the governor's mansion while Governor Josh Shapiro and his family were inside. No one was hurt. Much of the residence has been left uninhabitable. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Austin Bermain. Here's what Northern Wisconsin needs to know. A bill proposed last summer to make the Apostle Islands a national park is back on the table. Congressman Tom Tiffany has stated that he plans to reintroduce the bill after it was shut down last summer amid pushback from the Bayfield community. The original bill also featured very little detail on important issues such as road improvement projects, housing need, or the potential effects that increased tourism could have on that area. If the bill is signed into law, the Apostle Islands would become the first national park in the state of Wisconsin. Saturday, May 10th, starting at noon over at Bobber's on the Lake, there's a benefit to support local business owner Bobby in her fight with cancer. There's going to be 50-50 drawings, basket raffles, karaoke, and food and refreshments. If you cannot attend but would still like to help, donations can be made at Double D's in Butternut or Mary Cassidy's in Fifield. Once again, this is taking place Saturday, May 10th, starting at noon over at Bobber's on the Lake. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction is pushing back against demands from the federal government. Savannah Tomey-Olson explains.
The Trump administration is telling state education departments to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion measures or risk losing funding. Now, State Superintendent Jill Underley is asking for more clarification. A letter from the Department of Education gave leaders 10 days to have school districts sign a form that essentially says they want to adhere to the law. Later, that deadline was extended. Schools now have until April 24th. The Department of Education said if school leaders did not sign that form, they could risk losing access to Title I funding. Underley wrote a letter back to the Department of Education saying they would not be collecting signatures from school districts, saying the request breaks rules, is redundant, and intimidates school districts. Wisconsin got $216 million from Title I programs this school year. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomey-Olson.
I'm Austin Bermain. This has been Civic Media News on 98Q Country. For more news, visit 98QCountry.com or civicmedia.us.
The Brewers face the Tigers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight, the Brewers opening a three-game series against the Tigers in Milwaukee. The crew now at 500 after losing to the Diamondbacks. 5-2, manager Pat Murphy says the team let that game slip away.
We had a chance to win the ball game. We didn't, you know, the kid makes the play in left field on Terang's ball. That was kind of a turning point, you know. That could have, we could have chased Gallen earlier. Credit to Gallen and credit to the D-backs for being relentless.
NBA, the Bucks beat the Pistons 140-133 in overtime. Pat Connaughton scoring a career-high 43 points.
I always knew it would be hard to score this many points, but I think it's underrated how much it takes out of you by the time you get to overtime. And I thought we did, aside from turnovers, I thought we did a pretty good job of getting a good shot for most of the game.
The Bucks now get ready to play the Pacers in Indy for the playoffs. Game one Saturday at noon. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Ben Stunkle, owner of Complete Rain Gutters, has had his mine in the gutter for over 30 years. Trust the expert. Call 715-499-4216 or visit CompleteRainGutter.com for your free quote today.
Reliable, affordable energy is critical to progress and building resilient, connected, and prosperous communities. Enbridge's Line 5 is a vital link delivering raw materials that are processed into propane, fueling communities, industry, and businesses across Wisconsin. Energy that powers agricultural equipment and heats homes. To learn more, visit Enbridge.com/L5WIS. Tomorrow is on.
Spring has sprung at Meijer's. Come check out the great deals on hunting and fishing gear for all outdoor activities. Great selection of turkey calls and decoys from Primo and Gooserback calls. Shotguns and rifles from Winchester, Ruger, Savage, and Mossberg. Ammunition from Federal, Winchester, Aguila, and Remington. For the fisher men and women, they have rods and reels from Daiwa and Fenwick. Lures from Meps, Berkeley, Strike King, and VMC, and many others. And footwear from Danner and La Crosse. Get your sport on at Meijer Sports Center next to Pick and Save and Phillips.
This update sponsored by UW Credit Union. For every stage of life, UW Credit Union is here for every you. Brewers Baseball Academy, presented by Fleet Farm, returns to cities this summer for its 13th year. Kids ages 6 to 14 are invited for a week of instruction and fun, plus a VIP day at American Family Field. Space is limited. Don't miss out. Visit brewers.com/camps for details. Join UW Credit Union at uwcu.org. Insured by NCUA.
More of the gray area. All right, so if you have clothes that have like a lot of holes in them, if they're missing zippers, buttons are falling off.
Well, it bears mentioning that one of the key ways that you bring a piece of clothing to that point is by frequent washing.
Right.
Yeah.
Frequent washing.
Frequent washing is involved. Joel realized that we may have implied that was not the case. I need to shout out my dad.
Oh.
Because he texted me a reminder, and I can't find the picture, but a couple months ago, we actually, I gave one of his shirts a proper send-off. We almost buried the thing at sea. So guys with stubble and collared shirts get along in unique ways over time. I don't know if people are aware of this because most people probably dispose of clothing that shows this level of wear, but my dad has actually worn through layers of fabric on his shirt collars because of the stubble on his neck.
Yeah, that's so true.
It's like it's possible. And he texted me mentioning, "I can't believe you didn't mention that." No, like we finally gave up. That shirt had to be almost as old as I was. It had to be 20 years old. But it was, I mean, it had a tear in the front. That shirt caught fish. That shirt saw loss. Like that thing had stories to tell. If I could hear stories from an object, the late blue shirt from George Gunderson's closet would be right there.
Oh, there might be a documentary coming about George Gunderson's blue shirt.
George's blue shirt.
It always amazes me. I'm not a big quality of clothing guy. I'm more about price and comfort. But it amazes me that I've had sweatshirts in my life. I've had shirts that have something on it in the front, whether it be Park Falls Little League or whatever, and it washed them 100 times.
Yep.
100 times, but yet they're just immaculate. But yet there's other ones that you wash them 7 times and they start to fall apart and fade.
Yep.
So that's the quality of the printing, obviously, on the shirt itself, which I'm not aware of when I buy it, but it's amazed me that I do have things that I'm just like, how is this thing still? It's gone through the washer and been beaten by it to the pulp for hundreds of times.
Oh, yeah.
Hours and hours, and it's still intact.
Dried too hot, held up to the sun every week for years, basically,
right.
And somehow even the arms aren't too short.
Left behind. There's always articles of clothing that you leave behind at the grandkids' Little League game or whatever, and it just keeps coming back. It won't go away. They said, "Oh, hey, we found your." I was hoping maybe you wouldn't find that.
I wish I could. I'd love to see a list of all the sweatshirts I've lost over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I had a knack for losing clothes when I went to St. Anthony's, and I remember one time I went through the St. A's lost and found box, which had made its way to the third floor boys' bathroom, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of sitting there in the entry area. There was an entry and then the bathroom. I don't remember why. But I remember digging in there one time and finding like 5 of my things. And it's like, who just dumped my stuff in here?
Somebody took my dresser drawer.
I still don't know if somebody like, yeah, well, because I was that kid who I'd wear clothes to school because it was cold. And then I'd just leave them in the closet, stuff them in my backpack. So by the end of about April, usually, mm-hmm. every piece of reasonably warm clothing was sitting there in the coat closet for whatever grade I was in that year.
See, I'm imagining at the gates of heaven, there's a huge lost and found, that it just, there's a box with your name on it. Here's everything you've ever lost in your life.
To some people, that is heaven. You don't yeah. need to get past the gates if the lost and found from your life is right there outside. It's like, ooh, I totally forgot about this thing.
That $20 bill that you thought you lost, but you're not sure if you spent it or broke it. Here it is. We found it for you.
Eternity, I don't know, but a long time, I could certainly certainly spend going through the things that I've lost.
I'll talk a little bit today about Jiminy Glick. You ever watch Jiminy Glick on YouTube? Or Martin Short has a character called Jiminy Glick, and I don't know if he still does these segments because he's older now, but he makes him. Martin Short, to me, is one of the funniest men that have ever lived on the planet. He's brilliant. So talented, just brilliant. And he does a character called Jiminy Glick, where he dresses himself up as a larger man, and the makeup is wonderful because if you didn't know Martin Short, you wouldn't believe that this person was actually not him. It was created by makeup and the ability to make someone look different. But the interviews, the comedic interviews that Jiminy Glick does with celebrities, is just absolutely tear-dropping hilarious to me anyway. Check it out on YouTube, J-I-M-M-I-N-I, Jiminy Glick, Martin Short. It may or may not be what you like, but I was watching one the other day that he did with the hater guy from
Bill Hader.
And it's all tongue-in-cheek. When you watch it at first, you're just like, is this guy for real? What's going on here? And the celebrities just love doing these interviews with him because they poke fun. It's just some of the greatest comedy ever on the planet.
Well, some of the lampooned interviews, I immediately think of Zach Galifianakis with Between Two Ferns.
Oh, yeah, that's good, too.
Oh, I love it. And that one's not family appropriate, but if you need a good laugh, just, yeah, like asking John Hamm if he's paved the way for other hot idiots. That sort of not real interview, that's good laughing.
Yeah.
That's some good laugh. I think of Martin Short, and I almost wish I could see him collaborate in some way with Billy Crystal. Those two guys, I think they can approach humor from the same angle and get slightly different results. But if you told me those guys knew the same things,
yeah, right,
or learned from the same people, I'd feel like that makes sense.
Similar type stuff, because the Fernando's Hideaway character also is a Jiminy Glick type of thing too. So it's good stuff. Well, you and I talked a little bit about this last week, I think, after our show on Monday. But there was one of the most bizarre no-hitters that turned into a non-no-hitter that ever happened in the history of baseball and college baseball a couple weeks ago, when North Carolina was taking on Boston College, and the pitcher for one of the teams had a no-hitter going with two outs in the ninth inning. There was a runner on first who had walked in the game, and the batter at the plate hit a line drive to the right side of the infield, which hit the base runner for the third out of the ninth inning, and everybody's celebrating a no-hitter, saying, well, that's a no-hitter. Nobody got a hit. Well, in reality, the rules of baseball are is if you bat a ball from home plate and it hits a runner and you reach first base, it's considered a base hit. It's considered a base hit, even though the third out was recorded, so they didn't get a no-hitter. And that's what's great about live sports, Gray, is some of those things that happen, and you're just like, what?
There's no one even to complain to.
Yeah.
You can't even. I'd just be sitting there with this. I wish we had the cameras on, because that look on my face is just like, what? You can't even yell at anybody. You know, you can't right. Submit a complaint. You just shout at the sky. You can pray about it. That's about the most you can do. I mean, that's just rude.
Yeah, it is rude. And I didn't see how deep the conversation went after that out happened, if it happened, but there was celebrating going on the field, and I don't know if it happened 10 minutes later or 20 minutes later that he realized he didn't get a no-hitter, and I'm sure the umpires were probably equally as confused.
Stuff like that would, I think, be the most compelling argument against atheism. It's like, you want me to believe there's no one out there messing with us like this?
Yeah.
A one-hitter, no-hitter? Come on, that doesn't just happen by accident. That's some kid with a magnifying glass saying, ha-ha, look what the ants do.
Speaking of baseball, Savannah Bananas continue to be one of my favorite things. I don't watch full games of these Savannah Bananas, but if you've never watched a Savannah Banana game, you can watch one on YouTube. And it's just, I think it's a good way to just loosen up that tight knot on the baseball powers that be just a little bit. And if the Savannah Bananas can lead to baseball just having a little bit more fun with it, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I like to think that too, but at the end of the day, how much do the Harlem Globetrotters have a say in the workings of the NBA?
Yeah, it's true.
I kind of view them as a similar experience. And yeah, it is absolutely an alternative experience for people who love the same game to have a good time. But I think more what we'll get out of the Savannah Bananas is proof that not every live viewing experience belongs on TV. I think the feeling in the air, I think the smell of the Savannah Stadium is involved in the fun of the bananas. And I've never been there. Right. But I suspect that, you know, the feeling of walking through the concourse when your feet are too tired and you're a little bit sunburned, and that's, you know, that drive home feeling where you're exhausted but you'd still do it again. That comes from being there from the start of the day when you got up too early. You know, it's, I think the fun of the Savannah Bananas is the fun of the human experience, not the fun of the televised sports experience.
Right. They're celebrating the game of baseball, but they're doing it in a totally fun way. And the teams are kind of trying to win, but that's not the most important thing. Just to give you an idea, if you've never seen the Savannah Bananas, just one rule they have is if there's a foul ball hit into the stadium and someone catches it in the air, it's an out. All right, it's an out. And yep. And there's awards given for trick plays, for fielding a ball between the legs, for catching a pop-up behind the back. And they're very talented players. Sometimes you'll see someone, usually almost every game, someone will come up to the plate in about 20-foot-high stilts. So the strike zone, obviously, is a little bit bigger on that. And there's just a lot of fun. The umpire will twerk once in a while behind the plate, do a little dance, shaking his rump. And it's just fun. It's just so much fun.
I've got a short list of the main 9 rules that make Savannah Bananas baseball different from MLB baseball.
Here we go.
So first of all, it's kind of scored like match play in golf. You win the inning and you get the point. Every inning is worth 1 point, except the last inning where every run counts.
So it's a top 9 list. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Top 9 list.
Rule 2, 2-hour time limit. That's okay. It. Pretty self-explanatory. Rule 3, no stepping out. If the hitter steps out of the box, it's a strike.
Okay.
Rule 4, with periods between both words, no bunting.
All right.
Okay. They really don't want it.
No bunting.
Rule 5, batters can steal first. On any pitch of an at-bat, the hitter can try to steal first base. This can happen on a pass ball, wild pitch, or any time they choose.
It. I love it.
Rule 6, no walks allowed. If a pitcher throws ball 4, it becomes a sprint. The hitter takes off running while every defensive player on the field must touch the ball before it becomes live.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
The hitter can advance to as many bases as they want. The ball does not have to touch the catcher or pitcher. Rule 7, no mound visits allowed. Let's keep the game moving. Rule 8, if a fan catches a foul ball, it's an out. Rule 9, showdown tiebreaker. If the game is tied at the end of the 2-hour limit, the game will go into a showdown tiebreaker. The hitter must score, and if they score, it's worth 1 point. If they get out, it's worth no points, and it's called a showdown shutdown. I'm pretty sure there's an instant win rule, too. Isn't there, like, something that can happen that instantly ends the game?
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter and the Snitch.
I know there's a rule where each inning is worth a point.
Yep.
If somebody scores a run, but in the last inning, every run counts.
I could swear there was an instant game over rule.
Yeah, so if you score 5 runs in the first inning, the other team scores none, it's 1-0, and there can only be 1 point scored every inning, but when you get to the final inning, every run counts toward the total. So,
oh, the first team to 5 points wins the game.
Oh, okay, first team to 5.
Yeah. So
if you win 5 innings.
Yep, that's it. That's okay. It, which makes sense in a 9-inning game, so that way it'll go to the end if it's fair, but if it's not fair, it's over quick.
Yeah.
I actually like that a lot.
Check it out, Savannah Bananas, and they actually have a pink team, I don't know what they're called, that they kind of travel with now and play against a lot, too.
Oh, some scapegoats.
Kind of like the Washington Generals of the Harlem Globetrotters.
My favorite Savannah Bananas clip is when they line up 3 pitchers and they all do a windup, but only one has a ball, and you got to figure it out as it's flying at you. It's great.
Random synchronized dances. Some of those are very, very good, too. And you never know when the pitcher is going to throw the ball in the middle of that dance.
Synchronized pitches.
Good stuff. Savannah Bananas. Check it out if you haven't already. This is the Gray Area. We take an hour on Monday morning just to kind of get together and talk about stuff and laugh a little bit. And we want to talk about free stuff because my wife and I experienced free stuff on the corner on Sunday, which is one of the reasons why my back hurts again a little bit here this morning. But is there a better, for me and my wife, there's no better joy. My wife will actually text me sometimes in the morning, and she'll say, "Went on a walk, free stuff."
I mean, like, I feel like that might be one of the best ways to score some decent antiques these days. Like, there's probably some curb score stories. It's too easy to accidentally let something valuable go. I mean, and I think most of the time when you find something valuable, it's somebody who didn't do their due diligence. For example, my one and really only big score from the curb was when I was living down in Eau Claire, and I saw an office chair sitting there just a couple apartments down.
Mm-hmm.
And It was heavy. And I thought, you know, I'm looking at it, I set it up. It's kind of a, it's a very standard office chair, kind of a blue vinyl material on the seat, and it had no armrests. So I was like, eh, I like armrests, but we'll put up with this. You and I are sitting right now in chairs with no armrests. They have a place in the world. If you wanted to play a guitar, for example, wouldn't want armrests. So there's value to it. But I thought, is this thing heavy? This is too heavy to bother with. And then I thought, wait, heavy chair. You don't make a chair heavy unless it's either cheap or it's expensive. And I look underneath the chair and I'm like, that doesn't look cheap. Cool, let's bring it in. And it was missing one wheel. One of its five wheels was gone. And the place where the wheel goes was fine. It wasn't like busted out or mangled in any way. And anybody who knows office, that's just a caster wheel. You can go to Walmart and probably get the right size.
Sure.
And sure enough, I went and got a wheel. In the process of replacing the wheel, I found a little label on the bottom. And immediately recognized the name Steel Case. Anybody who knows, Steel Case translates to starts at $600. Wow. I was like, it was missing a wheel? It was missing a wheel. A $5 wheel. Cool. That's still the main office chair. I don't know. That's going to last longer than the pants I got from Tractor Supply Co.
Is it bad taste to pick up something free on the side of the road, especially if it's real close to your neighborhood? Is it inappropriate for you to then put it back out in front of your house with a price tag on it?
Oh, no. No. And I'm going to put a price tag on the side that faces the road, and on the side of the item that faces the house where I found it, I'm going to put another sign that says, Nana na boo boo, you could have. Like, what am I supposed to do? Their due diligence for them? No, I got my day to worry about. And the balance between that and kindness is what we all must find.
Yeah, there's advantages to living on a one-way dead-end road, but one of them is not getting rid of free stuff. Free stuff, if you live in the city, any city in the United States, or maybe in the world, I don't know. But, and if you got stuff, my wife always says, well, throw that away. And I was like, well, I'll just put it over here. We kind of have our free area at our house now. There's a telephone pole there, and I just staple a sign to it. I said, let's see if somebody wants it. It's never failed yet. I've never taken anything back.
No, it's absolutely. I mean, if it's truly garbage and you know it, if you feel in your heart that you shouldn't put it out there, it'll probably stay for a while. But, yeah, the only thing I've ever put out by the curb that didn't get taken was brush. City's like, yeah, cool, nice shrubbery, you can stay.
Everybody's got a reason for needing something. Some people, it may be as deep as being a hoarder or whatever it is, that is the reason why people take stuff. People always have a reason. I mean, everybody who's listening right now can think of something that maybe you've kind of, you're looking, you have your eye out for a while, whether it be a rain barrel or maybe a little fence for your garden or something that someone else just, for some reason, they don't need it anymore. And now your need list all of a sudden is what they're getting rid of.
Yeah, there's a particular area of the brain heavily involved in identifying that which you are seeking. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the mammoth for meat, whether it's the straight lines in the woods that denote a house or something like that, or even the straight line of a deer's back. You know, that's something that, you know, you don't know that your eye is seeking those things, but your brain sure does. Mm-hmm. So when you're like a rain barrel, for example, there's a lot of things that could kind of do the job, and cool, that list will assemble itself in your subconscious, and you'll get that, ooh, you get the monkey instinct when you see a thing on the curb next to Joel Karnick's house that fits the bill.
People should never be embarrassed about putting out free stuff, and you should never be embarrassed about stopping to look at free stuff. It's just kind of, it's better than throwing it in, I always say it's better than throwing it in a dumpster. If somebody can use it, why not?
There's a word out there called sonder that I first encountered like 15 years ago when Facebook made it popular with pretty pictures and quotes of trees in the background and stuff. But sonder is the realization that people's lives are as complex as yours. That this whole story that you live, there's billions of them out there. Mm-hmm. And one flavor of that is one man's trash is another man's treasure. You don't understand what, I mean, to you, it's trash. That is the intersection of that object's life and where you're at in your life. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what part of somebody else's life that secondhand chair is going to intersect with. They might be putting together the ice fishing shack on a budget because it's the right time of year to save on things that are good for winterizing.
You might have 14 shovels and the person driving by is looking for a shovel. So there you go.
Well, I mean, at that point, we're just talking about wholesale and you're basically reinventing the capitalism wheel. But the point still stands. It's just like, I have 14 shovels, you have no shovels, and I need money. I think we can connect these dots.
We will archive this. We archive archive every week's Gray Area, 98qcountry.com. We take Monday mornings, 8 to 9, and Gray and I just kind of chat about random subjects. If you have something you'd like us to talk about, someone asked us to talk about pickleball, and I didn't feel like I was ready yet.
I'm unqualified.
I am too, so I'm going to have to get a little more on pickleball, and maybe we'll delve into that next week. But if you want to text us any topic ideas, go ahead. That's fine.
Well, I mean, everybody from the elderly to the NFL athlete is playing pickleball these days, which means I got left in the transition somewhere because I'm somewhere between those groups, and I haven't played pickleball.
I played cornhole this weekend, so I'm feeling I'm not qualified to talk about pickleball. So
I'd rather play pickleball than split wood, but I know what I'm doing this weekend.
All right. Have a great week, Gray. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Greg Gunderson's in 2-6 today due to Brewer baseball, giving him an hour off. Greg Gunderson, Joel Karnick here, The Gray Area, 98Q Country.